Need to feel that unstoppable high again. The skyrocketing jumps, the unmatched speed, the animal-like agility. My pulse was giddy, beating and fluttering with need, need, need. My vision blurred and my knees slackened. I could almost taste the relief and fulfillment that would come with one little sip. I quickly counted the bottles. 15. No way would Dante notice if one went missing. I knew it was wrong to steal, just as I knew Devilcraft wasn't good for me. But those thoughts were dull arguments floating aimlessly at the back of my head. I rationalized that prescription medicine in the wrong doses wasn't good for me either, but sometimes I needed it, just like I needed a taste of Devilcraft. Devilcraft. I could hardly think. I was so smitten and greedy for the power I knew it would give me. A sudden thought seized me. I might die if I didn't get it. The need was that potent. I would do anything for it. I had to feel that way again. Indestructible. Untouchable. Before I knew what I'd done, I took a bottle. It felt cool and reassuring in my grip. I hadn't even taken a sip and already my head was clearing. No more vertigo, and soon, no more cravings. The bottle fit perfectly in my grip, as if it were meant to be there all along. Dante wanted me to have this bottle. After all, how many times had he tried to get me to drink Devilcraft? And hadn't he said my next dose was on the house? I'd take one bottle, and it would be enough. I'd feel the rush of power once more, and I'd be satisfied. Just once more. Chapter 18. My eyes opened to a sudden rap on the door. I sat up, disoriented. Sunlight streamed through my bedroom window, indicating that it was late morning. My skin was clammy with sweat. My sheets tangled around my legs. On my nightstand, an empty bottle lay tipped on its side. The memory stormed back. I'd barely made it to my bedroom before twisting off the cap, flinging it hastily aside, and draining the Devilcraft in seconds. I'd choked and gagged, feeling as though I would suffocate as the liquid clogged my throat, but I knew that the faster I guzzled, the sooner it would be over. A surge of adrenaline unlike anything I'd ever felt had expanded inside me, vaulting my senses to an exhilarating high. I'd had the urge to run outside and push my body to the limit, sprinting and bounding and dodging everything in my path, like flying, only better. And then, just as quickly as the urge had spiked inside me, I'd collapsed. I didn't even remember falling into bed. "Wake up, sleepyhead," my mom called through the door. "I know it's the weekend, but let's not sleep the whole day away. It's already after 11. 11? I'd been out cold for 4 hours. "I'll be down in a second," I responded, my whole body shaking from what had to be a side effect of the Devilcraft. I'd consumed too much too fast. It explained my body shutting down for hours and the peculiar jittery sensation pulsating inside me. I couldn't believe I'd stolen the Devilcraft from Dante. Worse, I couldn't believe I'd drunk it. I was ashamed of myself. I had to find a way to correct it, but I didn't know where to start. How could I tell Dante? He already thought I was as feeble as a human, and if I couldn't control my own appetites, it only proved him right. I should have just asked him for it, but I was disconcerted to realize that I'd enjoyed stealing it. There had been a certain thrill in doing something bad and getting away with it. Just like there had been a thrill in overindulging in the Devilcraft, drinking it all immediately and refusing to ration it. How could I be having these awful thoughts? How could I have let myself act on them? This wasn't who I was. Swearing that this morning would be the last time I ever used Devilcraft, I buried the bottle at the bottom of the wastebasket and tried to flush the incident from my head. I assumed that by this hour I'd be eating breakfast alone, but I found Marcy at the kitchen table, crossing off a list of phone numbers. "I've spent all morning inviting people to the Halloween party," she explained. "Feel free to jump in at any time." "I thought you were mailing invites." "Not enough time. The party is Thursday." "A school night? What's wrong with Friday?" "Football game?" My face must have registered confusion because she elaborated. "All my friends will either be playing in the game or cheering. Plus, it's an away game, so we can't just invite them over after." "And Saturday?" I asked, incredulous that we were throwing a party during the week. My mom would never go for it. Then again, Marcy had a way of talking her into just about anything these days. "Saturday was my parents' anniversary. We're not doing it Saturday," she said with a note of finality. She pushed the list of phone numbers toward me. I'm doing all the work and it's really starting to get on my nerves. I don't want anything to do with the party, I reminded her. You're just huffy because you don't have a date. She was right. I didn't have a date. I'd talked about bringing Patch, but that would require me to forgive him for meeting Blakely last night. The memory of what had happened came rushing back. Between sleeping last night, training with Dante this morning, and falling unconscious for several hours, I'd completely forgotten to check my phone for messages. The doorbell chimed and Marcy jumped up. I'll get it. I wanted to yell at her, quit acting like you live here. But instead, I squeezed past her and took the stairs two at a time to my room. My handbag hung over my closet door, and I dug through it until I found my cell phone. I drew in a sharp breath. No messages. I didn't know what it meant, and I didn't know if I should worry. What if Blakely had ambushed Patch? Or what if his silence was merely because we'd parted on bad terms last night? When I got angry, I wanted space, and Patch knew it. I fired him a quick text. Can we talk? Downstairs, I heard Marcy break into a flustered argument. I said, I'll go get her. You have to wait here. Hey, you can't just burst in without being invited. Says who? V shot back, and I heard her bustle up the stairs. I met them in the hallway outside my bedroom. What's going on? Your fat friend elbowed her way inside without being invited, Marcy complained. This skinny cow is acting like she owns the place, V told me. What is she doing here? I live here now, Marcy said. V barked a laugh. Always a funny one you are, she said, wagging her finger at Marcy. Marcy's chin jutted up. I do live here. Go ahead, ask Nora. V looked at me and I sighed. It's temporary. V rocked back on her heels as though hit by an invisible punch. Marcy? Living here? Am I the only one who realizes all logic just got up and walked off? It was my mom's idea, I said. It was my idea and my mom's, but Mrs. Gray agreed it was for the best, Marcy corrected. Before V could ask more questions, I snagged her elbow and dragged her inside my bedroom. Marcy inched forward, but I shut the door on her. I was trying my hardest to be civil, but letting her in on a private conversation with V was taking the idea of courtesy too far. Why is she really here? V demanded, not bothering to lower her voice. It's a long story. The short of it is, I don't know what she's doing here. Evasive, yes, but honest, too. I had no clue what Marcy was doing here. My mom had been Hank's mistress, I was their love child, and it stood to reason that Marcy would want nothing to do with us. Gee, everything's clear now, V said. Time to hit her with a distraction. Marcy is throwing a Halloween party here at the farmhouse. Dates are required, ditto on costumes. The theme is famous couples from history. And, V said, not warming up at all, Marcy's got dibs on Scott. V narrowed her eyes. Like heck she does. Marcy already asked him, but he didn't sound very committed. I offered helpfully. V cracked her knuckles. Time to work some V magic before it's too late. My cell phone chimed with a text. Got the antidote. We need to meet. Patch's message read. He was okay. Tension left my shoulders. Discreetly, I slipped my phone into my pocket and told V, My mom needs me to pick up the dry cleaning and return library books, but I can swing by your place later. And then we can plan how I'm going to steal Scott from the hoe, V said. I gave V a 5-minute head start, then backed the Volkswagen down the driveway. Leaving the farmhouse now, I texted Patch. Where are you? Heading to the townhome, he responded. Meet you there. I drove to Casco Bay, too busy formulating what I'd say to Patch to take in the stunning fall scenery. I was only half aware of the deep blue water glinting under the sun and the waves spraying and foaming as they smashed into the craggy cliffs. I parked a few blocks from Patch's place and let myself inside. I was first to arrive and went out on the balcony to gather my thoughts one final time. The air was cool and sticky with salt, with just enough breeze to raise goosebumps, and I hoped it would temper my anger and the lingering sting of betrayal. I appreciated that Patch always had my safety in mind, and I was touched by his concern and didn't want to sound ungrateful that I was lucky enough to have a boyfriend who would go to any lengths for me. But a deal was a deal. We'd agreed to work as a team, and he'd broken my trust. I heard the garage door glide open, followed by Patch's motorcycle pulling in. A moment later, he appeared in the living room. He kept his distance, but his eyes were all over me. His hair was wind-blown, and a dark stubble dotted his jawline. He wore the same clothes I'd last seen him in, and I knew he'd been out all night. "Busy night?" I asked.
"I had a lot on my mind."
"How's Blakely?" I asked, with just enough indignation to let Patch know I hadn't forgiven or forgotten.
"He swore an oath to keep our relationship quiet."
A pause.
"And he gave me the antidote."
"So your text said." Patch sighed and scrubbed his hand through his hair.
"So this is how it's going to be. I get that you're mad, but can you step back a minute and see things from my side? Blakely told me to come alone, and I didn't trust how he'd react if I showed up with you by my side. I'm not opposed to taking risks, but not when the odds are clearly against me. He had the better hand, this time."
"You promised we were a team."
"I also swore to do everything in my power to protect you. I want what's best for you. It's as simple as that, Angel."
"You can't keep taking charge and then claiming that it's for my safety."
"Making sure you're safe is more important to me than your goodwill. I don't want to fight, but if you're set on seeing me as the bad guy, so be it. Better that than lose you."
He shrugged. I gasped at his arrogance, then promptly narrowed my eyes. "Is that really how you feel?"
"Have you ever known me to lie, especially when it comes to my feelings for you?"
I snatched my handbag off the sofa. "Forget this. I'm leaving."
"Suit yourself, but you're not stepping a foot outside until you've taken the antidote."
As if to prove his point, he leaned back against the front door, folding his arms over his chest. Glaring at him, I said, "For all we know, the antidote could be poison."
He shook his head. "Dabria analyzed it. It's clean."
I gritted my teeth. Controlling my temper was officially out of the question now.
"You took Dabria, didn't you? I guess this means the two of you are a team now," I snapped. "She stayed far enough off Blakely's radar not to alert him, but got close enough to read bits and pieces of his future. Nothing there indicated foul play with regard to the antidote. He made a fair trade. The antidote is good."
"Why don't you try seeing things from my side?" I seethed. "I have to put up with my boyfriend choosing to work closely with his ex. She's still in love with you, you know." Patch kept his steady gaze glued to me.
"And I'm in love with you, even when you're irrational, jealous, and willful. Dabria has had substantially more practice in mind tricks, takedowns, and fighting Nephilim in general. Sooner or later, you're going to have to start trusting me. We don't have a lot of allies, and we need all the help we can get. As long as Dabria is contributing, I'm willing to keep her on board."
My fists were clenched so hard, I felt my nails threaten to break skin. "In other words, I'm not good enough to be your teammate. Unlike Dabria, I don't have any special powers."
"That's not it at all. We've been over this. If something were to happen to her, I wouldn't consider it unfortunate. You, on the other hand..."
"Yeah, well, your actions speak for themselves." I was hurt and angry, and determined to show Patch he was underestimating me, and all of the above led to my next startling declaration. "I'm leading the Nephilim to war against fallen angels. It's the right thing to do. I'll deal with the archangels later. I can live in fear of them, or I can get over myself and do what I know is best for the Nephilim. I don't want another Nephil to swear fealty, ever. I've made up my mind, so don't bother talking me out of it," I stated bluntly. Patch's black eyes watched me, but he said nothing. "I've been feeling this way for a while," I said, made uncomfortable by his silence and anxious to prove my point of view. "I'm not going to let fallen angels continue to bully Nephilim."
"Are we talking about fallen angels and Nephilim, or you and me?"
Patch asked quietly at last.
"I'm tired of playing defense. Yesterday a war party of fallen angels came after me. That was the last straw. Fallen angels need to know we're done being messed with. They've harassed us long enough. And the archangels, I don't think they care. If they did, they'd have stepped in by now and put an end to Devilcraft. We have to assume they know and are looking the other way."
"Did Dante have anything to do with your decision?"
Patch asked, not a single crack in his quiet composure. His question irritated me. "I'm the leader of the Nephilim army. I call the shots." I expected his next question to be, "Where does this leave us?" So his ensuing words took me by surprise.
I want you by my side, Nora. Being with you is my top priority. I've been at war with the Nephilim a long time. It's shaped me in ways I wish I could take back. The deception, the cheap tricks, even the brute force. There are days I wish I could go back and take a different path. I don't want you to have the same regrets. I need to know you're strong enough physically, but I also need to know that you're straight up here. He touched my forehead gently. Then he caressed my cheek, holding my face in the palm of his hand. Do you really understand what you're getting into? I pulled away, but not quite so hard as I'd intended. If you'd quit worrying about me, you'd see I'm up for this. I thought of all the training I'd done with Dante. I thought of how gifted he believed I was at mind tricks. Patch had no clue how far I'd come. I was stronger, faster, and more powerful than I'd ever imagined possible. I'd also been through enough over the past several months to know I was now firmly in his world. Our world. I knew what I was getting into, even if Patch didn't like it. You might have stopped me from meeting Blakely, but you can't stop the war from coming, I pointed out. We were on the brink of a deadly and dangerous conflict. I wasn't going to sugarcoat it, and I wasn't about to look the other way. I was ready to fight. For Nephilim freedom. For mine. It's one thing to think you're ready, Patch said quietly. Jumping into war and seeing it firsthand is a different ballgame. I admire your bravery, Angel, but I'm being honest when I say I think you're rushing into this without fully weighing the consequences. You think I haven't thought this through? I'm the one who has to lead Hank's army. I've spent many sleepless nights thinking this through. Lead the army, yes, but no one ever said anything about fighting. You can fulfill your oath and stay far out of harm's way. Delegate the deadliest tasks. That's what your army is for. That's what I'm here for. This argument was starting to make me bristle. You can't constantly protect me, Patch. I appreciate the thought, but I'm Nephilim now. I'm immortal and less in need of your protection. I'm a target of fallen angels, archangels, and other Nephilim, and there's nothing I can do about that except learn to fight back. His eyes were clear, his tone level, but I sensed a certain sadness under his cool exterior. You're a strong girl, and you're mine. But strength doesn't always mean brute force. You don't have to kick ass to be a fighter. Violence doesn't equal strength. Lead your army by example. There's a better answer to all this. War isn't going to solve anything, but it will tear our two worlds apart, and there will be casualties, including humans. There's nothing heroic about this war. It will lead to a destruction unlike anything you or I have ever seen. I swallowed. Why did Patch always have to do this? Say things that only made me more conflicted. Was he telling me this because he honestly meant it, or was he trying to sweep me off the battlefield? I wanted to trust his intentions. Violence wasn't always the way. In fact, most of the time it wasn't. I knew that. But I saw Dante's point of view, too. I had to fight back. If I came across as weak, it only hung a larger target on my back. I had to show that I was tough and would retaliate. For the foreseeable future, physical strength mattered more than strength of character. I pressed my fingers into my temples, trying to rub away the worry that echoed like a dull ache. I don't want to talk about this now. I just need some quiet time, okay? I had a rough morning, and I'll deal with this when I'm feeling better. Patch didn't look convinced, but he didn't say anything more on the matter. I'll call you later, I said wearily. He retrieved a vial of milky white liquid from his pocket and handed it to me. The antidote. I'd been so caught up in our argument I'd completely forgotten about it. I scrutinized the vial suspiciously. I did manage to get Blakely to tell me that the knife he stabbed you with is the most powerful prototype he's developed yet. It put 20 times the amount of devilcraft into your system than the drink Dante gave you. That's why you need the antidote. Without it, you'll develop an unbreakable addiction to devilcraft. In high enough doses, certain devilcraft prototypes will rot you from the inside out. They will scramble your brains, same as any other lethal drug. Patch's words caught me off guard. I'd woken this morning with an insatiable appetite for devilcraft because Blakely had caused me to crave it more than eating, drinking, or even breathing. The thought of waking up every day driven by that hunger put a red-hot feeling of shame in my veins. I hadn't realized how high the stakes were. Unexpectedly, I found myself grateful to Patch for getting the antidote. I'd do anything to never feel that unconquerable need again. I unstopped the vial. Anything I should know before I take this? I passed the vial under my nose. No odor.
It won't work if you've had Devilcraft introduced into your system in the last 24 hours, but that shouldn't be a problem. It's been well over a day since Blakely stabbed you,
Patch said. I had the vial an inch from my lips when I stopped. Just this morning, I'd consumed an entire bottle of Devilcraft. If I took the antidote now, it wouldn't work. I'd still be addicted.
Plug your nose and tip it back. It can't taste as bad as Devilcraft, Patch said.
I wanted to tell Patch about the bottle I'd stolen from Dante. I wanted to explain myself. He wouldn't blame me. This was Blakely's fault. It was the Devilcraft. I'd guzzled a whole bottle of it and I'd hardly had a choice. I was so blinded by need. I opened my mouth to confess everything, but something stopped me. A dark, foreign voice planted deep inside murmured that I didn't want to be free of Devilcraft. Not yet. I couldn't forfeit the power and strength that came with it. Not when we were on the brink of war. I had to keep those powers close, just in case. This wasn't about Devilcraft. It was about protecting myself. The craving started then, licking up my skin, watering my mouth, causing me to shudder with hunger. I pushed the feelings aside, proud of myself when I did. I wouldn't give in the way I had this morning. I would only steal and drink Devilcraft when I absolutely needed it, and I'd keep the antidote with me always so I could break the habit whenever I wanted. I'd do it on my terms. I had a choice in this. I was in control. Then I did something I never imagined I'd do. The impulse fired into my consciousness and I acted without thinking. I locked eyes with Patch for the briefest of moments, summoned all my mental energy, feeling it flex inside me like a great unleashed and natural power, and mind-tricked him into thinking I'd taken the antidote. Nora drank it, I whispered deceptively to his mind, planting an image there that backed up my lie. Every last drop. Then I slipped the vial into my pocket. The whole thing was over in seconds.
Chapter 19. I left Patch's place intending to drive home, all the while combating a violent wrenching in my stomach that felt part guilt, part genuine illness. I couldn't remember a single time in my life when I'd felt more ashamed, or more ravenous. My stomach contracted, spiking with hunger pangs. They were so sharp they left me doubled over against the steering wheel. It was as though I'd swallowed nails and they were scraping my insides raw. I had the strangest sensation of feeling my organs shrivel. It was followed by the frightening question of whether my body would eat itself for nourishment. But it wasn't food I needed. I pulled over and called Scott. I need Dante's address.
You've never been to his place before. Aren't you his girlfriend?
It irritated me that he was slowing the conversation. I needed Dante's address. I didn't have time to chit-chat. Do you have it or not?
I'll text you the address. Something wrong? You sound antsy. Have for a few days now.
I'm fine, I said, then hung up and slouched in my seat. Sweat beaded my upper lip. I clenched the steering wheel, trying to fend off the cravings that seemed to grip me by the throat and rattle me. My thoughts were glued to one word, Devilcraft. I tried to swat the temptation away. I'd just taken Devilcraft this morning, a whole bottle. I could beat these cravings. I decided when I needed more Devilcraft. I decided when and how much. The prickly sweat spread to my back, little rivulets scurrying beneath my shirt. The bottoms of my thighs, hot and moist, seemed to stick to the seat cushions. Even though it was October, I blasted the AC. I steered back onto the road, but the blare of a passing horn caused me to brake abruptly. A white van sped past, its driver making an obscene gesture through the window. Get a grip, I told myself. Pay attention. After a few head-clearing breaths, I uploaded the address to Dante's house onto my cell phone. I studied the map, gave an ironic laugh, and flipped a U-turn. Dante, it seemed, lived less than 5 miles from Patch's townhouse. 10 minutes later, I'd driven under a lush arch of trees canopying the road, crossed a cobblestone bridge, and parked the Volkswagen on a quaint and curving tree-lined street. Houses were predominantly white Victorians with gingerbread detail and steeply pitched roofs. All were flamboyant and excessive. I identified Dante's, a Queen Anne at 12 Shore Drive, that was all spindles and towers and gables. The door was painted red with a big brass knocker. I skipped the knocker and went straight for the bell, pushing it repeatedly. If he didn't hurry and answer...
Dante cracked the door, his face registering surprise. How'd you find this place?
Scott.
He frowned. I don't like people showing up at my door unexpectedly. A lot of foot traffic looks suspicious. I've got nosy neighbors.
It's important.
He jerked his chin back toward the road. That piece of junk you drive is an eyesore.
I wasn't in the mood to exchange witty insults. If I didn't get Devilcraft into my system soon, just a few drops, my heart was going to gallop right out of my chest. Even now, my pulse raced, and I was laboring to draw breath. I might as well have spent the past hour running up a steep hill, I was so winded. I said, I changed my mind. I want Devilcraft as a backup. I quickly added, in case I find myself in a situation where I'm outnumbered and I need it. I couldn't focus long enough to tell if my reasoning sounded flimsy. Red spots flashed across my vision. I desperately wanted to wipe my brow, but I didn't want to draw extra attention to how profusely I was sweating. Dante gave me a questioning look I couldn't quite interpret, then led me inside. I stood in the foyer, darting my eyes over the clean white walls and lush oriental rugs. A hallway led back to the kitchen. Formal living room on my left and dining room painted the same oxblood red as my eye spots on my right. As far as I could see, every furnishing was antique. A crystal droplet chandelier hung overhead. Nice, I managed to choke out between my skittering pulse and tingling extremities. The house belonged to friends. They left it to me in their will. Sorry they passed.
He strode into the dining room, tilted a large painting of a haystack to one side, and revealed the time-honored hidden wall safe. He punched in the code and opened the box. Here you go. It's a new prototype. Incredibly concentrated, so drink it in low doses, he cautioned. 2 bottles. If you decide to start taking it now, it should last a week. I nodded, trying to hide my watering mouth as I took the blue glowing bottles.
There's something I want to tell you, Dante. I'm leading the Nephilim to war, so if you can spare more than 2 bottles, I could use them.
I'd fully intended to tell Dante about my decision to go into battle, but I had not meant to tell him with the intent of hoping to score extra Devilcraft. It seemed like a sneaky maneuver, but I was too hungry to feel much more than a pinch of guilt.
War? Dante repeated, sounding startled. Are you sure?
You can tell the Nephilim higher ups that I'm devising plans to go against fallen angels.
This is great news, Dante said, still sounding shell-shocked as he stuffed an extra bottle of Devilcraft into my hands. What made you change your mind?
A conversion of heart, I said, because I thought it sounded good. I'm not just leading the Nephilim. I am one. Dante saw me out, and it took every ounce of control to walk calmly to the Volkswagen. I kept our farewell short, then drove around the corner, immediately parked, and twisted the cap off the bottle. I was about to tip it back when the sound of Patch's ringtone caused me to jump, splashing blue liquid on my lap. It evaporated instantly, rising into the air like smoke from a snuffed match. I cursed under my breath, furious that I'd lost even a few precious drops. Hello? I answered. The red spots streaked my vision.
I don't like finding you in another man's house, Angel.
Immediately, I looked both ways out the window. I shoved the Devilcraft under my seat. Where are you?
3 cars back.
My eyes flew to the rearview mirror. Patch swung off his motorcycle and strolled toward me, phone pressed to his ear. I wiped my face with the neck of my shirt. I cranked down my window.
Following me? I asked Patch.
Tracking device.
I was starting to hate that thing. Patch leaned a forearm on the roof of my car, bending close.
Who lives on Shore Drive?
That tracking device is pretty specific.
I only buy the best.
Dante lives at 12 Shore Drive. No use lying when it sounded like he'd already done his research.
I don't like finding you in another man's home, but I hate finding you in his.
His expression was calm enough, but I could tell he wanted an explanation. I needed to confirm our workout time for tomorrow morning. I was in the area and figured I might as well stop by. The lie slipped out easy. So easy. All I could think of was getting rid of Patch. My throat filled with the taste of Devilcraft. I swallowed impatiently. Gently, Patch pushed my sunglasses higher on my nose, then bent through the window and kissed me.
I'm on my way to research a few more leads into Pepper's blackmailer. Need anything before I head out?
I shook my head no.
If you need to talk, you know I'm here for you, he added softly.
Talk about what?
I asked, almost defensively. Could he know about the Devilcraft?
No, he couldn't.
He studied me a moment.
Anything?
I waited until Patch drove off before I drank, one greedy sip at a time, until I was full. Chapter 20. Thursday evening arrived, and with it the complete transformation of the farmhouse. Garlands of autumn leaves in scarlet, gold, and chestnut spilled off the eaves. Bushels of dried corn stalks framed the door. Marcy had purchased what appeared to be every pumpkin and gourd in all of Maine, and lined them up along the sidewalk, the driveway, and every last square inch of porch. Some were carved into jack-o'-lanterns, flickering candlelight in their spooky expressions. A vindictive part of me wanted to tell her it looked like a craft store had thrown up on our lawn, but the truth was, she'd done a nice job. Inside, haunted music played from the stereo. Skulls, bats, cobwebs, and ghosts cluttered the furniture. Marcy had rented a dry ice machine, as if we didn't have enough authentic fog in the yard. I had two paper bags filled with last-minute items in my arms, and I carted them into the kitchen. "I'm back!" I yelled. "Plastic cups, one bag of spider rings, two bags of ice, and more skeleton confetti, just like you asked. Soda's still in the trunk. Any volunteers to help carry it in?" Marcy sashayed into the room, and I did a jaw drop. She wore a black vinyl bra and matching leggings. Nothing more. Her ribs poked through her skin, and she had total popsicle stick thighs. "Put the soda in the fridge, the ice in the freezer, and sprinkle the skeleton confetti on the dining room table. But don't get any in the food. That's it for now. Stay close in case I need anything else. I have to go finish my costume." "Well, that's a relief. For a minute there, I thought that was all you planned on wearing," I said, gesturing at the skimpy vinyl. Marcy glanced down. "It is. I'm Catwoman. I just need to hot glue black felt ears to my headband."
"You're wearing a bra to the party?"
"Just a bra."
"A bandeau?"
Oh, this was going to be good. I couldn't wait for V's commentary.
"Who's Batman?"
"Robert Boxler." I guess that means Scott bailed. It was more of a rhetorical question, just to give the proverbial knife one last twist. Marcy gave her shoulders a pompous little hike. "Scott who?" she said, and marched upstairs.
"He chose V over you," I called triumphantly after her.
"I don't care," Marcy sing-songed back. "You probably made him. It's no secret he does everything you say. Put the soda in the fridge before the turn of the century." I stuck my tongue out, even though she couldn't see it. "I have to get ready too, you know." At 7, the first guests arrived. Romeo and Juliet, Cleopatra and Mark Antony, Elvis and Priscilla. Even a bottle of ketchup and mustard strolled through the front door. I let Marcy play hostess and moseyed into the kitchen, stacking my plate with deviled eggs, cocktail wieners, and candy corn. I'd been too busy granting Marcy's every pre-party command to eat dinner. That and the new formula of Devilcraft Dante had given me seemed to curb my appetite for the first several hours after I took it. I'd done a reasonably good job of rationing it and still had enough to last a few more days. The night sweats, headaches, and strange tingling sensation that would seize me at the oddest moments when I'd first started taking the new formula had gone away. I was sure this meant that the dangers of addiction had passed and I'd learned to use Devilcraft safely. Moderation was key. Blakely might have tried to hook me on Devilcraft, but I was strong enough to set my own limits. The effects of Devilcraft were unbelievable. I'd never felt so mentally and physically superior. I knew I had to stop taking it eventually, but with the stress and dangers of Heshvan and war looming, I was glad I was being cautious. If another of my doubting Nephilim soldiers attacked me, this time I'd be ready. After filling up on appetizers and Sprite served from a black cauldron, I elbowed my way into the living room, looking to see whether V and Scott had arrived. The lights were dimmed, everyone was in costume, and I had a hard time picking faces out of the crowd. Plus, I'd peeked at the guest list. It was heavily weighted in favor of Marcy's friends.
"Love the costume, Nora, but you're anything but a devil."
I looked sideways at Morticia Adams. I squinted in confusion, then smiled.
"Oh, hey, Bailey. I almost didn't recognize you with black hair."
Bailey sat beside me in math, and we'd been friends since junior high. I picked up my devil tail with the little red spade at the tip to save it from the guy behind me who kept accidentally stepping on it and said, "Thanks for coming tonight. Did you finish your math homework?" I didn't understand a single thing Mr. Huron tried to teach us today. Every time he started working a problem on the chalkboard, he'd stop halfway through, erase his work, and start over. I don't think he knows what he's doing. Yeah, I'm probably going to spend hours on it tomorrow. Her eyes lit up. We should meet at the library and do it together. I promised my mom I'd clean out the cellar after school, I hedged. Truth be told, homework had slipped a few notches on my list of priorities as of late. It was hard to stress about school when I feared that any day now the eerie ceasefire between fallen angels and Nephilim was going to snap. Fallen angels were up to something, and I'd give anything to find out what.
Oh, maybe next time, Bailey said, sounding disappointed. Have you seen V?
Not yet. Who's she coming as? A babysitter. Her date is Michael Myers from Halloween, I explained. If you see her, tell her I'm looking for her. When I made it across the living room, I bumped into Marcy and her date, Robert Boxler.
Food status? Marcy asked me authoritatively.
My mom's handling it.
Music?
Derek Coleman is DJ.
Are you working the crowd? Is everyone having fun?
I just finished a round, more or less. Marcy eyed me with criticism.
Where's your date?
Does it matter?
I heard you're dating some new guy. I heard he doesn't go to school. Who is he?
Who'd you hear that from? Guess word about Dante and me was getting around after all.
Does it matter?
She echoed snidely. She scrunched her nose in distaste. What are you dressed up as?
She's a devil, Robert said. Pitchfork, horns, red vamp dress.
Don't forget the black combat boots, I said, showing them off. I had V to thank for them, as well as the red glitter laces.
I can see that, Marcy said, but the party's theme is famous couples. A devil doesn't go with anything.
Just then, Patch ambled through the front door. I did a double take to make sure it was really him. I hadn't expected him to come. We'd never resolved our fight, and I'd pridefully refused to take the first step, forcing myself to lock my cell phone in a drawer every time I was tempted to call him and apologize, despite my increasing distress that he might never call either. My pride immediately turned to relief at the sight of him. I hated fighting. I hated not having him close. If he was ready to mend this, so was I. A smile flickered over my face at the sight of his costume. Black jeans, black t-shirt, black face mask. The latter concealed all but his cool, assessing gaze.
There's my date, I said. Fashionably late.
Marcy and Robert turned. Patch gave me a low wave and handed his leather jacket to some poor freshman Marcy had roped into coat duty. The price some girls would pay to attend an upperclassman party was almost shameful.
No fair, Robert said, taking off his Batman mask. The dude didn't dress up.
Whatever you do, don't call him dude, I told Robert, smiling at Patch as he made his way over.
Do I know him? Marcy asked. Who is he supposed to be?
He's an angel, I said. A fallen angel.
That isn't what a fallen angel looks like, Marcy protested.
Shows how much you know, I thought, just as Patch slung his arm around my neck and pulled me into a light kiss. I've missed you. He spoke to my thoughts. Same here. Let's not fight anymore. Can we put it behind us?
Consider it done. How's the party going?
He asked. I haven't felt like jumping off the roof yet.
Glad to hear it.
Hi there,
Marcy said to Patch, her tone more flirtatious than I would have thought with her date standing inches away.
Hey, Patch returned, extending acknowledgement with a brief nod.
Do I know you?
She asked, tilting her head inquisitively to one side.
Do you go to CHS?
No,
he said without elaborating.
Then how do you know Nora?
Who doesn't know Nora? He returned mildly.
And this is my date, Robert Boxler, Marcy told him with an air of superiority. He plays quarterback for the football team.
Impressive, Patch answered, his tone just polite enough to scrape by as interested. How's the season shaping up, Robert?
We've had a few rough games, but it's nothing we can't bounce back from, Marcy cut in, patting Robert's chest consolingly.
What gym do you use?
Robert asked Patch, eyeing his physique with open admiration and envy.
Haven't had a lot of time lately for the gym. Well, you look great, man,
If you ever want to lift weights together, call me.
Good luck with the rest of the season, Patch told Robert, giving him one of those tricky handshakes all guys seem to know instinctively.
Patch and I wandered deeper into the house, winding through hallways and rooms, trying to find a secluded corner. At last he pulled me inside the powder room, kicked the door shut, and locked it. He leaned me back against the wall and fingered one of my red devil ears, his eyes deep black with desire.
Nice costume, he said.
Ditto.
I can tell you put a lot of thought into yours.
Amusement curled his mouth.
If you don't like it, I can take it off.
I tapped my chin thoughtfully. That just might be the best proposal I've had all night.
My offers are always the best, Angel.
Before the party started, Marcy asked me to lace up the back of her Catwoman pants. I raised and lowered my hands in a weighing gesture. Between both offers, it's a tough call. Patch removed his mask and laughed softly into my neck, brushing my hair back off my shoulders. He smelled incredible. He felt warm and solid and so very close. My heart beat faster, squeezing with guilt. I'd lied to Patch. I couldn't forget. I shut my eyes, letting his mouth explore mine, trying to lose myself in the moment. All the while, the lies beat, beat, beat in my head. I'd taken Devilcraft, and I'd mind-tricked him. I was still taking Devilcraft.
Trouble with your costume is, it doesn't hide your identity very well, I said, pulling back.
And we're not supposed to be seen together in public, remember?
Just stopping by for a minute. Couldn't miss my girl's party, he murmured.
He lowered his head to kiss me again.
V's still not here, I said. I tried her cell and Scott's. I got sent a voicemail both times. Should I worry?
Maybe they don't want to be disturbed.
He spoke into my ear, his voice deep and gravelly. He pushed my dress higher up my leg, stroking his thumb over my bare thigh. The warmth of his caress overrode my bad conscience. Sensation shivered through me. I shut my eyes again, this time involuntarily. All the knots loosened. My breath came a little faster. He knew just how to touch me. Patch lifted me onto the sink's ledge, his hands splayed on my hips. I got warm and woozy inside, and when he put his mouth on mine, I could have sworn sparks went off. His touch seared me with passion. The fluttery, intoxicating liquid heat of being near him never grew old, no matter how many times we touched, flirted, kissed. If anything, that electric jolt intensified. I wanted Patch, and I didn't trust myself when I did. I don't know how long the bathroom door stood open before I noticed. I jerked away from Patch, mouth gaping. My mom stood in the shadowy entrance muttering about how the lock had never worked properly, and she'd been meaning to fix it for ages, when her eyes must have adjusted to the dimness, because she stopped mid-apology. Her mouth snapped shut. Her face blanched, then flushed a deep, sizzling red. I'd never seen her look so enraged.
Out! She flung her finger away. Out of my house this instant, and don't think of coming back or touching my daughter again,
she hissed at Patch, livid. I jumped off the sink.
Mom!
She turned on me.
Not a word from you, she sputtered. You said you broke up with him. You said it, this thing, between you and him. It was over. You lied to me.
I can explain, I started, but she'd swiveled back to Patch.
Is this what you do? Seduce young girls in their own homes, with their own mothers standing feet away? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Patch laced his hand in mine, gripping it tightly.
Quite the opposite, Blythe. Your daughter means everything to me. Completely and wholly. I love her. It's as simple as that.
He spoke with calm assurance, but his jaw was as rigid as if cut from stone.
You destroyed her life. From the moment she met you, everything fell apart. You can deny it all you want, but I know you were involved in her kidnapping. Get out of my house!
She snarled. I clung to Patch's hand fiercely, murmuring, I'm sorry, so sorry, over and over in mind speak. I'd spent the summer locked away against my will in a remote cabin. Hank Miller was the mastermind behind my imprisonment, but my mom didn't know that. Her mind had erected a wall around his memory, trapping in everything good and casting out the rest. I blamed Hank, and I blamed Devilcraft.
She'd worked it out in her mind that Patch had been responsible for my kidnapping, and it was as much a truth to her as the sun rising each morning.
"I should get going," Patch told me, giving my hand a reassuring squeeze. "I'll call you later," he added privately to my thoughts.
"I should think so," my mom snapped, her shoulders rising from the exertion of breathing heavily.
She stepped aside, allowing Patch to exit, but closed off the doorway before I could escape.
"You are grounded," she said in a voice like iron. "Enjoy the party while it lasts, because it's going to be your last social event for a long, long time."
"Are you even interested in hearing me out?" I shot back, enraged by the way she'd treated Patch.
"I need time to cool down. It's in your best interest to give me some space. I might be in the mood to talk tomorrow, but that's the last thing I'm interested in right now. You lied to me. You went behind my back. Worse, I had to find you stripping off your clothes with him in our bathroom. Our bathroom! He wants one thing from you, Nora, and he'll take it wherever he can get it. There's nothing special about losing your virginity over a toilet."
"I wasn't... We weren't...
My virginity?"
I shook my head and made a disgusted gesture.
"Forget it. You're right. You don't want to listen. You never have. Not when it comes to Patch."
"Everything okay here?" My mom and I turned to find Marcy standing just outside the door. She held an empty cauldron in her arms and hitched her shoulders apologetically.
"Sorry to interrupt, but we've run out of monster eyeballs, aka peeled grapes."
My mom shoved some hair off her face, trying to collect herself.
"Nora and I were just finishing up. I can make a quick run to the store for grapes. Anything else we're low on?"
"Nacho cheese dip," Marcy said in this timid mouse voice, as if she hated imposing on my mom's kindness.
"But it's really no big deal. I mean, it's only nacho dip. There will be nothing to go with the chips, of course, and it is my favorite. But really and truly, no big deal."
The tiniest sigh escaped her.
"Fine, grapes and nacho dip. Anything else?" my mom asked.
Marcy hugged the cauldron and beamed.
"Nope, that's it."
My mom fished her keys out of her pocket and walked off, her every movement harsh and stiff. Marcy, however, stayed put.
"You could always mind trick her, you know, make her think Patch was never here."
I turned cool eyes on Marcy.
"How much did you hear?"
"Enough to know you're in deep crapola. I'm not going to mind trick my own mom."
"If you want, I could talk to her."
I breathed a laugh.
"You?
My mom doesn't care what you think, Marcy. She took you in under some misguided sense of hospitality, and probably to prove something to your mom. The only reason you're living under this roof is so my mom can throw it in your mom's face. She was the better lover, and now she's the better mother."
It was a horrible thing to say. It had sounded better in my head, but Marcy didn't give me time to amend my statement.
"You're trying to make me feel bad, but it won't work. You're not going to ruin my party."
But I thought I saw her lip wobble. With an intake of air, she seemed to collect herself. Suddenly, as if nothing had happened, she said in a bizarrely cheerful voice, "I think it's time to play Bob for a date."
"Bob for a what?"
"It's like bobbing for apples, except every apple has a name of someone from the party attached. Whoever you draw is your next blind date. We play it every year at my Halloween party."
I frowned. We hadn't gone over this game idea beforehand.
"Sounds tacky."
"It's a blind date, Nora. And since you're grounded for eternity, what have you got to lose?"
She pushed me into the kitchen toward the giant tub of water with red and green apples floating in it.
"Hey, everyone, listen up," Marcy called over the music. "Time to play Bob for a date. Nora Gray goes first."
Applause broke out across the kitchen, along with catcalls and a few shouts and whistles of encouragement. I stood there, mouth moving but emitting no words, cursing Marcy fluently in my mind.
"I don't think I'm the best person for this," I yelled at her over the noise. "Can I pass?"
"Not a chance." She gave me what looked like a playful shove, but it was forceful enough to send me stumbling to my knees in front of the tub of apples. I shot her a look of pure indignation.
"I'll make you pay for this," I told her.
"Pull your hair back. Nobody wants nasty stray hairs floating in the water," Marcy instructed. In agreement, the crowd roared a collective, "Boo!" Red apples are matched to boys' names, Marcy added. Green to girls.
Fine, whatever, just get this over with, I told myself. It wasn't like I had anything to lose. Starting tomorrow, I was grounded. There were no blind dates in my future, game or no. I dipped my face into the cold water. My nose bumped into one apple after another, but I couldn't sink my teeth into any of them. I came up for air and my ears rang with boos and jeering hisses.
Give me a break, I said. I haven't done this since I was 5. That should say a lot about this game, I added.
Nora hasn't had a blind date since she was 5, Marcy said, misinterpreting my meaning and adding her own commentary.
You are so next up, I told Marcy, glaring at her from my knees.
If there is a next, looks to me like you might be sucking face with apples all night.
She returned sweetly, and the crowd howled with amusement.
I plunged my head into the tub, snapping my teeth at apples. Water sloshed over the rim, drenching the front of my Red Devil costume. I came this close to grabbing an apple with my hand and pressing it into my mouth, but figured Marcy would disqualify the move. I wasn't in the mood for a do-over. Just as I was about to come up for another breath, my front teeth crunched into a blood-red apple. I surfaced, shaking water out of my hair to the sounds of cheering and applause. I chucked the apple at Marcy and grabbed a towel, patting my face dry.
And the lucky guy who gets a blind date with our drowned rat here is...
Marcy pulled a sealed tube from the center of the cored apple. She uncurled the scroll of paper inside the tube and her nose wrinkled.
Baruch? Just Baruch?
She pronounced it like Baruch.
Am I saying that right?
She asked the audience. No response. Already people were shuffling away now that the immediate entertainment had ended. I was grateful that Baruch, whoever he was, appeared to be a fake entry. Either that or he was too mortified to own up to a date with me. Marcy stared me down as though expecting me to admit I knew the guy.
He's not one of your friends? I asked her as I scrunched the tips of my hair in the towel.
No, I thought he was one of yours. I was on the verge of wondering whether this was another one of her bizarre games when the lights in the house flickered. Once, twice, then they shut off completely. The music faded to eerie silence. There was a moment of stupefied confusion, and then the screaming started. Baffled and jumbled at first, rising to a hair-raising note of terror, the screams preceded the unmistakable thud of bodies being thrown against the living room walls.
Nora! Marcy cried. What's going on?
I didn't have a chance to answer. An invisible force seemed to smack me back a step, rendering me paralyzed. Cold, crisp energy coiled up my body. The air crackled and flexed with the power of multiple fallen angels. Their sudden appearance in the farmhouse was as tangible as a gust of Arctic wind. I didn't know how many there were or what they wanted, but I could feel them move deeper into the house, spreading out to fill every room.
Nora, Nora, come out and play, a male voice sing-songed.
Unfamiliar and eerily falsetto. I drew two shallow breaths. At least now I knew what they were after.
I'll find you, my sweet, my pet, he continued to croon in chilling tones.
He was close, so close. I crawled behind the family room sofa, but someone had beat me to the hiding place.
Nora, is that you? What's going on?
Andy Smith asked me. He sat two chairs behind me in math and was Marcy's friend Addison's boyfriend. I could feel the heat of his sweat rising off him.
Quiet, I instructed him softly.
If you won't come to me, I'll come to you, the fallen angel sang out. His mental power sliced into me like a hot knife. I gasped as he felt around inside my mind, probing every which way, analyzing my thoughts to determine where I was hiding. I threw up wall after wall to stop him, but he plowed through them like I'd constructed them from dust. I tried to recall every defense mechanism Dante had taught me against mind invasion, but the fallen angel moved too fast. He was always two dangerous steps ahead. I'd never had a fallen angel have this effect on me before. There was only one way to describe it. He was directing all his mental energy at me through a magnifying glass, amplifying the effect. Without warning, an orange glow flared in my mind. A great furnace of energy blasted across my skin. I felt the heat of it melt my clothes. Flames chewed through the fabric, raking my skin with hot torment.
In unimaginable agony, I coiled into a ball. I tucked my head between my knees, grinding my teeth to keep from screaming. The fire wasn't real. It had to be a mind trick. But I didn't really believe it. The heat was so blistering, I was sure he really had lit me on fire. "Stop!" I finally cried out, lunging into the open and writhing on the floor. Anything to suffocate the flames devouring my flesh. In that instant, the fiery heat vanished, though I hadn't felt the water that had surely extinguished it. I lay on my back, my face bathed in sweat. It hurt to breathe. "Everyone out," the fallen angel commanded. I'd almost forgotten there were others in the room. They would never forget this. How could they? Did they understand what was happening? Did they know this hadn't been staged for the party? I prayed someone would go for help, but the farmhouse was so remote it would take time to bring help. And the only person who could help was Patch, and I had no way to reach him. Legs and feet scrabbled across the floor, darting for the exit. Andy Smith dodged from behind the sofa and plowed frantically through the doorway. I lifted my head just high enough to look at the fallen angel. It was dark, but I saw a towering, skeletal, half-naked silhouette, and two savage, glittering eyes. The bare-chested fallen angel from the devil's handbag and the woods watched me. His disfiguring hieroglyphics seemed to twitch and flutter over his skin, as though attached to invisible strings. In reality, I was sure they moved with the rise and fall of his breathing. I couldn't peel my eyes away from the small, raw wound on his chest. "I'm Baruch." I scooted to the corner of the room, wincing in pain. "Heshvan has started, and I don't have a Nephil vassal," he said. He kept his tone conversational, but there was no light in his eyes. No light and no warmth. Too much adrenaline made my legs feel twitchy and weighted. I didn't have many options. I wasn't strong enough to barrel past him. I couldn't fight him. If I tried, one call to his buddies would leave me outnumbered in seconds. I cursed my mom for kicking Patch out. I needed him. I couldn't do this on my own. If Patch were here, he'd know what to do. Baruch traced his tongue along the inside of his lip. "The leader of the Black Hand's army. And what am I to do with her?" He plunged into my mind. I felt him do it, but I was powerless to prevent it. I was too exhausted to fight. The next thing I knew, I had crawled obediently over and lay at his feet like a dog. He kicked me onto my back, gazing predatorily down at me. I wanted to bargain with him, but my teeth were clenched so tightly it was as if my jaw had been sewn shut. "You can't argue with me," he whispered hypnotically to my mind. "You can't refuse me. Whatever I command, you must do." I tried unsuccessfully to shut out his voice. If I could break his control, I could fight back. It was my only shot. "How does it feel to be a brand new Nephil?" he murmured in a cold, scornful voice. "The world is no place for a Nephil without a master. I'll protect you from other fallen angels, Nora. From now on, you belong to me." "I don't belong to anyone," I spat, the words slamming out of me with grueling effort. He exhaled, slow and deliberate. It came out like a chastising whistle between his teeth. "I'll break you, my pet. Just see if I won't," he growled. I looked at him square on. "You made a big mistake coming here tonight, Baruch. You made a big mistake coming after me." He grinned, a flash of sharp white teeth. "I'm going to enjoy this." He took a step closer, power spilling off him. He was almost as strong as Patch, but there was a bloodthirsty edge to his power that I'd never felt with Patch. I didn't know how long ago Baruch had fallen from heaven, but I knew without any doubt that he had given himself over to evil, wholeheartedly. "Swear your oath of fealty, Nora Gray," he ordered. Chapter 21. I would not swear the oath, and I would not allow him to drag the words out of me. No matter how much pain he heaped on me, I had to stay strong. But a resilient defense alone wasn't going to be enough to endure this. I needed an offense, and fast. "Counter his mind tricks with a few of your own," I commanded myself. Dante had said mind tricks were my best weapon. He said I was better at it than almost any Nephil he knew of. I'd fooled Patch, and I would fool Baruch now. I'd create my own reality and shove him so hard inside it he wouldn't know what hit him. Squeezing my eyes shut to block out Baruch's insidious chant to swear my oath, I catapulted myself inside his head. My greatest confidence came from knowing I'd consumed Devilcraft earlier today. I didn't trust my own strength, but the Devilcraft made me a more powerful version of myself. It heightened my natural talents, including my aptitude for mind tricks. I fled down the dark, twisted corridors of Baruch's mind, planting one explosion after another. I worked as quickly as I could, knowing that if I made one mistake, if I gave him any reason to think I was reconstructing his thoughts, if I left any evidence of my presence, I chose the one thing I knew would alarm Baruch, Nephilim. "The Black Hand's army," I thought explosively at Baruch. I assailed his thoughts with an image of Dante rushing into the room, followed by 40 Nephilim. I leaked pictures of their enraged eyes and hard fists into his subconscious. To make the vision even more convincing, I made Baruch think he was watching his own men being dragged away captive by Nephilim. Despite all this, I felt Baruch's resistance. He stood nailed to the spot, not reacting as he should have at being surrounded by Nephilim. I feared that he suspected something was off and plunged ahead. "Mess with our leader, mess with us. All of us," I flung Dante's venomous words into Baruch's mind. "Nora isn't going to swear fealty now. Not now, not ever." I created a picture of Dante picking up the poker from the fireplace toolkit and plunging it into Baruch's wing scars. I shoved the vivid image deep inside Baruch's brain. I heard Baruch fall to his knees before I opened my eyes. He was down on all fours, shoulders hunched. An expression of utter shock seized his features. His eyes glazed and spittle pooled in the corners of his mouth. His hands reached for his back, grasping at air. He was trying to remove the poker. I exhaled in weary relief. He'd bought it. He'd bought my mind trick. A figure moved near the doorway. I shot to my feet and snatched the real poker from the fireplace. I raised it off my shoulder, readying to swing, when Dabria stepped into view. In the semi-darkness, her hair glowed glacial white. Her mouth was a grim line.
"You mind-tricked him?" she guessed.
"Nice. But we have to get out of here now," she told me. I almost laughed, cold and disbelieving. "What are you doing here?" She stepped over Baruch's unmoving body.
"Patch asked me to take you somewhere safe."
I shook my head. "You're lying. Patch didn't send you. He knows you're the last person I'd ever go with." I tightened my grip on the poker. If she came another step closer, I'd gladly shove it in her wing scars. And like Baruch, she'd be in a near-comatose state until she found a way to dislodge it.
"He didn't have much of a choice. Between chasing out the other fallen angels who raided your party and erasing the minds of your panic-stricken friends who are fleeing down the street as we speak, I'd say he's a little preoccupied. Don't the two of you have a secret code word for situations like this?"
Dabria asked without a crack in her icy composure.
"When I was with Patch, we had one. I would have trusted anyone Patch gave it to."
I didn't take my eyes off her. Secret code word? My, but she was good at worming under my skin. "In fact, we do have a secret code," I said. "It's Dabria's a pathetic leech who doesn't know when to move on." I covered my mouth.
"Oh, I just realized why Patch probably failed to share our secret code."
Scorn dripped from the words.
"With you."
Her lips thinned further. "Either tell me what you really came here for, or I'm going to shove this thing in your scars so deep it will be your new permanent appendage," I told her.
"I don't have to put up with this," Dabria said, turning on her heel.
I followed her through the vacant house and out to the driveway. "I know you're blackmailing Pepper Freiberg," I said. If I'd taken her by surprise, she didn't show it. Her stride never faltered. "He thinks Patch is blackmailing him, and he's doing everything he can to put Patch on the fast track to hell. Credit goes to you, Dabria. You claim you're still in love with Patch, but you have a funny way of showing it. Because of you, he's in danger of exile. Is that your plan? If you can't have him, no one can?" Dabria beeped her keychain, and taillights flashed on the most exotic sports car I'd ever seen. "What is that?" I asked. She shot me a condescending look.
"My Bugatti."
A Bugatti. Flashy, sophisticated, and in a class of its own, just like Dobria. She dropped behind the wheel.
Might want to get that fallen angel out of your living room before your mom gets back. She paused. And you might want to check the validity of your accusations.
She started to pull her door closed, but I wrenched it back open. Are you denying blackmailing Pepper? I asked angrily. I saw the two of you arguing behind the devil's handbag.
Dobria wrapped a silk driving scarf around